This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. It is the Thursday, the 14th of January, 6 o'clock in the morning. Also, day two of our movement control order, round two. How are you all feeling today?
I'm feeling okay. It doesn't feel like a MCO. It just feels like life is the same.
Yeah, I actually don't encounter any police roadblocks on my way to work. Not yet.
I think the police are just being kind, and they just want to make sure that we toe the line first before they bring out the forces.
Indeed.
To be fair, I've seen plenty of them around. It's just that I think they're strategically located in certain areas where maybe there were high traffic volumes from before. So yeah, that's something. But even during the first version of the MCO one, 10 months ago, on the route to work, there weren't really that roadblocks. And just in front of the Tamantun police station, that's about it.
Yeah. So, because I was a little bit startled because I'm coming from the center of the city, right? So usually MCO in the round one, there were quite a lot of roadblocks. Now there's none. And so my 18-kilometer drive to work is completely uninhibited, as we say. And anyway, in the meantime, we do have lots of things to keep you occupied with us this morning in the next hour or so. Noel, what are we going to be looking at later on about 6:30?
Yes, so that will be international news. So something about impeachments, something about US and China, and also about Chinese vaccine.
Impeachment. I wonder who that could be about.
Mysterious.
In about 15 minutes, Lynn, we'll be talking about this article. I like the headline of this article. It's now that he's been banned, we can say it. Donald Trump was a genius at Twitter. It's been something. He's been, we may not regard him very highly in a lot of things, but when it came to getting his messaging across on Twitter, he may have been too effective at it, which resulted in what we saw last week. So we'll get into that and some thoughts around it and more about that. But, you know, towards the end of the hour, of course, we take a look at the local papers and the portals. And immediately one of the first headlines I see here is the EcoWorld UEM Sunrise merger that was such a big deal last year, that talk around it, it's apparently off the table. So more on that later.
All right. And if you want to weigh in on these conversations, WhatsApp us 01878988899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're asking you whether or not job titles matter to you. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Papa Was a Rolling Stone by The Temptations, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So I'm looking at this article in Fast Company. It's quite an interesting one. It's set up sort of like an advice column. And it's asking the question of how does this person, who's a founder of a company growing from 50 to 100 people, how does this person manage job titles? Because they in the company never really worried about it before, but now that they're recruiting outside, titles seem to matter a lot. So it's a very interesting question, particularly for companies kind of on that cusp of you're not quite a startup anymore. You've gotten a little bit too big, but you're not on the scale of the big corporates yet. When you're at that point where you are trying to shift your operations, become a little bit more bureaucratic, how does one actually go about it? And do job titles really matter that much? What do we think about this?
I think at one point that I thought in Asia, it is very important because it is about face. But then I realized actually, I think it's the same in America or in Europe as well, because that's the reason why some companies, you have so many directors, you have so many vice presidents, but just one president. In fact, now I think you also have many presidents. Each division has a president. So I think it's a face thing. It's also maybe it's a way for companies to poach talents. And it's also a way to, instead of paying them high salaries, here, I give you a fancy title. And that's enough to entice you to come over. So, you know, next time when I present my business card to my auntie in Chinese New Year, I'm like director of so-and-so company, right? It does sound more grand than, say, senior executive or even senior manager.
Yeah. Also, it depends on the size of the company, right? You can't have a company of three people and call yourself president, COO and CEO, right?
Trust me, I've seen that in startups.
All right. Well, it means nothing, you know, it really comes down to that. It really comes with the scale of the company. And just to give some context, right, this advice column is written by Maynard Webb, who is the former CEO of LiveOps. I don't know what the company is, but I do know what eBay is. And he was the former COO of eBay. In fact, he was with eBay for from 1999 to 2006, when it grew from just 140 million ringgit, $140 million in revenue to $4.5 billion in revenue. So he knows what scaling up a company is about, out, right? And I think that's the point he's making it here. When you start reaching a certain number of employees, you do need to start segregating the employees based on their function as well, right? A manager isn't a manager if there's enough people to manage. You can't have a manager with three people. You need a certain size of a team to do that. And I think for the employee side, you also want a bit of, the title does give you a sense of direction in terms of what your role is as well. Because once you come to a certain point, you can't have, in a company of 200 people, you can't have everyone be executives, right? Mm. You can't just have everyone be, oh, an executive. We don't want to segregate between executives. You can't do that. At some point, you have to be, okay, you're a senior executive. You're an executive for this. You're a this thing for that. You know, there needs to be some kind of specialization and categorization of the functions of these employees after a certain time. Noel, everything you said about recognition, all that's also very important, right? Because after a while, employees also want to be recognized for the work that they do or the seniority that they should command and things like that.
And from a reporting standpoint as well, okay, because I've worked in companies that were very small, that were like 8 people, and you're all sitting in one kind of one glass-walled office, and you basically yell and everyone can hear you. You whisper and everyone can hear you. And in a situation like that, it's very easy to get things done, because if you have a problem or you have something that needs to be resolved, you kind of yell across the office, hey, Noel, can I grab you for this? You know, I need to solve this problem. But when you're in a larger company, especially for new hires coming in, it can get a little bit confusing. If you know, in a company of 100 people, who do you go to for this one particular thing? You can no longer yell across the office and have the person that you need just stick up their hand and say, oh yeah, you know, I can help you resolve that. It doesn't work anymore. So after a certain point, you know, for that clarity and that hierarchy, it does help to have designated titles for certain things. And also from an employee standpoint, if you have a specific title, it helps to put off scope creep, because there have been cases, and friends of mine have told me about cases where, okay, they are social media manager, for example, and social media manager is a relatively new job title in here in Asia, right? But they came in as social media manager, then they started to handle other digital things. Then they started to handle video things, and it just kind of snowballed, and all of this somehow came under their scope, and they didn't understand how that was initially the case. They weren't necessarily remunerated for the extra work, so that gave birth to some frustrations with their initial job title.
And also another thing, giving job titles suggests there's some promotion or some improvement that's happening in your life, right? And I think that's why in some big companies where people stay on for quite a number of years, you start to see very funny leveling, like for example, assistant general manager and deputy general manager. It boggled my mind when I first saw it. Like, who is actually more senior? So I reckon it was the deputy general manager. For some reason, deputy. So that's why I thought that might be the more senior. And then there's a general manager. So it's like, and then better still, then they went even further. AGM 1, AGM 2, AGM 3.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I was like, wow, where is this going to stop?
After
right?
It comes, I guess after a certain size or certain 10 years, there are certain, I guess, caveats that they make, right? But essentially, the long story short here is a small organization doesn't need, the titles aren't as important, because you're just, one, you're trying to survive, and two, you're trying to get something done, right? And for simplicity, you are all the management team of that company, of that very, very small company. But as you grow, you need structure in place in order to scale. You cannot scale without structure. That doesn't happen. So I guess that's why titles are important. There is all the social elements to it as well.
Yeah, so I think companies use that to motivate people to keep improving, to keep moving up the value chain.
Well, let us know what you think about this. Tell us, do job titles matter to you? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we are taking a look at Donald Trump's Twitter strategies. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Foster the People with Pumped Up Kicks, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Burton and Noel. So there's a very interesting opinion article in The Guardian this morning, and it's looking at Donald Trump's Twitter habits. And it's got an interesting title. It says here, the title here is, "Now that he's been banned, we can say it. Donald Trump was a genius at Twitter." And this is looking at the fact that Donald Trump almost, I guess you could say he he made the platform relevant, and he used Twitter to such an extent that he managed to whip his followers into a fury on multiple occasions. And he did all of this while also being president of the United States of America. And this behavior is not necessarily one that you expect or really condone from a head of state, but he nevertheless utilized Twitter in a way that clearly, you know, managed to draw his followers to him and make him, I guess, relatable. So what do you think about his Twitter habits?
Well, apparently in 2017, he told Trump told Fox News that he believed that he had never been elected without Twitter. And he viewed it back then even as a effective point of pushing his message across. And he does that, right? He's announced policy on Twitter first. Twitter has got exclusive White House policy directives before, all right? And because of this, though, because he's undoubtedly used it for official purposes, under the Presidential Records Act, I think this was a bit, social media was also classified as part of that communication. All of that is considered public property. It belongs to the government now. The Trump administration needs to hand all that over on January 20th, not just for the POTUS account, but for the real Donald Trump account, including deleted posts and DMs. All of that is now public record. And he has the option, he reserved the right to invoke as many as 6 specific restrictions to public access for up to 12 years. So after 12 years, you have access to all of it. All of that is public record. It will be in the National Library. It will be under, there will be a website called Trump Library and all this, because all presidential communication belongs to the government. So that's really interesting to just think about for a second.
So in 12 years' time, you can access this and have a first-hand account of the vitriol that he spewed.
After 12 years, you will see the 6 ones he hid.
Okay.
But all of that is public, is public access, actually. It's all public property, apparently. So it's going to be interesting because he has used it to get messaging across. He bypassed traditional media, you know, and he used, and here's the thing we have to think about. Media reported on his tweets, right? Because it was the word of the President of the United States. And he used it for policy, not personal things. So that's really what changed the game, because while they may not report on him, they reported on what he tweeted, and he used that to his advantage. Whenever the news cycle went down, he tweeted something crazy and then immediately he was in the news again.
Yeah, so I like the way how The Guardian has phrased this, right? Banning Trump from Twitter is a bit like banning E. coli from your large intestine. Even if he never comes back, the memories will be enough. So I think that's just how influential he is, right?
Ah, the British.
Yeah, so, okay, first of all, he has influence, and all he was going to be acquiring influence. So he is the most important man in the world at one point in time. So I think what made him so appealing is the fact that I think he just expressed how people felt deep within themselves. Obviously there were many suppressed sentiments out there in an age of political correctness, and he just merely just put them all out, and really he just opened the Pandora box. And he said it in the most direct manner, right? You just cannot, you know, there's no fluff to it, right? It is what it is, and it's very, it is in your face. So, and because the brain is usually incapable of taking in too much information, that's why his tweets can be so direct and appealing. And I just want to make this point. Social media platforms are really coming of age, and they're facing the same problem as traditional media. We have this problem as a traditional media. Do we take the center approach? Because the center approach doesn't grab as many eyeballs. But if you take a one-sided view, then you grab eyeballs, but you put your reputation at stake. So I think now social media platforms have to make this decision. Are they one and for all for everyone, or do they now need to start filtering?
Yeah, I think the thing about Donald Trump is that he was, no matter what, he was unapologetically himself, right?
And a perception of the self he wanted to portray.
A persona that he wanted to portray. And we've talked before about companies and how they utilize social media to engage with followers. I think examples would have been names like Oreo, some of the fast food chains who tweet back to their followers or to tweets aimed at them and respond to viral trends on the internet. And all of this gains, you know, it garners some a form of goodwill towards them, relatability. And Donald Trump did that for his supporters, even while he was in office. So it's definitely an interesting position we find ourselves in towards the end of his term as U.S. president. But let us know what you think. Was Donald Trump the greatest Twitter user of all time? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got the 6:30 news bulletin coming up, but here to take you there is Patty Smith with Frederick, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noelle Lim. That was Sheryl Crow with A Change Would Do You Good. But no change this morning, as always with 6:30, we are looking at what's been happening on the international stage. And over in the US, okay, they are seeing maybe some changes because Donald Trump has become the first president in history to be impeached a second time.
Yeah, so very interesting. I guess what the chamber is charging him for are high crimes and misdemeanors for inciting an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol 7 days ago. I think the president's behavior in the 13 months since the first impeachment had left House Democrats making a more clear-cut case than the first time round. And so the chamber has charged Trump in a 232 to 197 votes as all Democrats and 10 Republicans backed this measure.
Yeah, so the four-page article of impeachment that the chamber approved on, essentially it argues that Trump fed his supporters months of false claims since the election, talking about widespread fraud cost, how the widespread fraud cost him the election, and then urged them to contest the result before then essentially leading to the march on Capitol, on the Capitol last week that disrupted Congress's count of President-elect Joe Biden's win. And we saw that, right? I mean, you can't go to his Twitter account anymore, but if you remember, there were perpetual basically stoking of flames of this, oh, the cheaters, oh, Mike Pence didn't have the gumption to do this.
Got thrown out like a dog.
Okay, yeah. But essentially, it all came down to that, right? He kept throwing shade on the entire democratic process. And I remember watching Mitch Romney's Mitt Romney's, Mitch McConnell's a different guy. Mitt Romney's speech last week, before they started the certification process, and he outright just called, he basically called Trump a liar, and that he was casting doubt on the very institution that elected him office, right? And if you take a look at the reactions 4 years ago when Democrats and Democratic supporters were upset over Trump's win, they were called crybabies and snowflakes and all the other things. But Fox News now is propping up the same behavior. It's not same behavior, sorry. Much, much, much worse behavior from Trump supporters.
I have to say this. I mean, obviously, his behavior is really unbecoming for even not just a statesman, but just an individual, right? But just to, you know, just talk about what the other side was saying. So many House Republicans do argue that during the debate that Trump was not afforded due process and the impeachment process was rushed. And some said that the impeaching the president for a second time would only further divide the country, while others maintain that Trump's actions on January 6th did not meet the legal standard for incitement. And so I think like Republicans, Kevin McCarthy of California, the top House Republican during the debate, he said, I believe impeaching the president in such a short time frame would be a mistake. Of course, you know, in this kind of situation, there will always be different views about
But these are the
Trump's
talking points
position.
That his supporters are going to bring up, right? They're just going to throw all this out there and be like, because now it goes to the Senate and it's not like it's going to go through. They need a two-third majority in Senate for the impeachment to go through.
They do need a two-third majority in the Senate. But not only that, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has said that after the House vote, the chamber is not going to be starting the trial until their first regular meeting following receipt of the article from the House, so Tuesday at the earliest, which means that it is highly, highly unlikely that a trial will be concluded before January 20th, because Tuesday, if we remember, is January 19th.
Yeah, I think the point of this vote, I guess, is to convict Trump so that, you know, that will bar him from holding federal office again.
But also just show that there are consequences for your actions in office, right? In fact, when we spoke to Catherine Dunthampus of the Miller Center a few days ago, the other things that happened are things that, yes, he won't be able to contest in the next election, but things like his pension, which is $200,000 a year for a president, or his Secret Service detail, all these things get taken back, right? Because he's been impeached. So
could potentially be taken back after a follow-up vote if he's convicted.
In the Senate. Yeah. It has to go through the Senate to get the two-third majority, which the Democrats don't have.
It's an extra vote that needs to happen after the Senate convicts. So it is a possibility that they're opening up.
Interesting. All right. But those are the consequences that could come up from this, right? End of the day. Because end of the day, getting two-thirds of the Senate to vote, oh, that's going to be a hill to climb.
It is indeed. And this is something that is going to be very interesting to watch and to see how this is going to affect as well Joe Biden's first few days in office as he stands to be inaugurated next week. But just very quickly as well, we have had some news that Johnson & Johnson is saying that their one-dose coronavirus vaccine is safe and appears to generate a promising immune response in both young as well as elderly voters. So they published some trial data so they published some trial data on Wednesday in the New England Journal of Medicine and said that they tested those between the ages of 18 and 55 as well as those 65 and older. And it could be, so this could be yet another vaccine in the arsenal against COVID-19 right now.
Yeah, I guess it depends. This makes it sound a lot more practical, right? Just one shot. And then also is about storage capabilities, right? I mean, how complicated is the storage going to be for this J&J vaccine? But I think at the moment, I think Malaysia is still testing. I think they're still running their own trials, right, for the vaccine before they would do a massive rollout. I guess that's part of their protocol. Although some people may question, hey, if Singapore can just take the Pfizer jab, why can't you just go ahead and do it too?
Yeah, I think I find that I can't fault caution, but at the same time, everyone is hankering for a vaccine. But we have to remember that a vaccine isn't going to be a silver bullet. It doesn't mean that we're going to be able to get back to, pre-COVID normal, like with the snap of a finger. We still need to be careful and maintain our social distancing and physical hygiene and all of that, particularly now as we are in the second MCO. So we're going to be coming back with more news out of our local papers and portals for you. Be sure to stay tuned for that after these messages, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. That was The Police with Don't Stand So Close to Me. I think that really needs to be the anthem of this global pandemic. Just whenever you're in a queue and someone's a little bit too close behind
don't
the line.
Don't stand so. Yep, that's the motto.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're looking at the front pages of our newspapers and portals this morning. I've got The Star in front of me and their headline here is Smoother Karma. So this is talking about the start, obviously, of the MCO 2.0 yesterday. And it was calmer, I think, in the center of city because we come to work at 5 in the morning. So there's really no one on the roads. But when I went home, there were certainly fewer people on the roads, presumably as well fewer people in public spaces, malls, etc., hopefully. So it may be, in these 2 weeks, we'll be able to get a bit of a handle on this virus. What's looking interesting in the papers that you have?
Well, I got the Malaysian Reserve and the headline goes, EcoWorld UEM Sunrise merger off the table. Now, this merger would have created Malaysia's largest property group. In a filing to the Bursa Malaysia yesterday, they're saying that with the current challenging environment and re-implementation of the MCO, they've decided not to pursue the proposed merger. And they will focus on their own respective businesses. Now, the merger was supposed to take advantage of UM Sunrise's large land bank and EcoWorld's global branding. Or that's what they say. But I think, if I remember correctly, there was a lot of criticism when this merger came up again. Basically, I think based on the ownership stake that would have been taken, the split of the ownership, it looked at that point by some critics were saying that it looked like a bailout for EcoWorld at the time because of the ownership structure. But now it's completely off the table and we'll see how each company does its own respective thing. But speaking of don't stand so close to me, another member of the cabinet has been reported as being tested positive for COVID-19. That's Deputy Communications and Multimedia Minister Dato' Zahidi Zainal Abidin. So another one has another time. And this is concerning, right? Because end of the day, the last time this happened was The whole cabinet was in quarantine. So with, now this is four members of cabinet at Khan. Let's just hope that it's this is the extent of the situation there. And speaking of the MCO, we've got, I think yesterday, a few headlines from the press conference with the health DG said, Tan Sri Dr. Noor Hisham said that I think they're looking at a maximum four-week MCO, if anything, to just to using maximum 4 weeks to get the curve flat again.
There are comments from him in The Star as well saying that actually a 2 week MCO may not be enough to reduce cases. So looking at 2 to 4 weeks, perhaps.
I'm sure they have projections, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got projections that, and I think that's, I think the projections were just looking very scary at based on the numbers they had, which is why what led to this MCO.
Yes, I think he mentioned there was a 2 week, 4 week, and a 6 week projection. And so 4 weeks is like the hopeful case, but let's, conservatively think that it might be 6 weeks. So we're talking about more than a month. So looking at the NST, some quick headlines here. Industry groups like the National Union of Bank Employees, Jay Solomon, he has called on the government to rope in industry giants to provide support to help the B40 and M40 as well as SMEs, because as we know, there are several companies that have benefited from the pandemic, like the rubber gloves, and they made extraordinary profits. And so he said plow back some of these profits to help the needy. The FMM, the Federation of Manufacturers, they are saying that the list that is provided by METI is not enough. It should also be extended to other industries as well, other manufacturing industries, maybe like I think they mentioned glass, toys, stationery products, footwear manufacturers. Now, maybe perhaps they're not seen to be so essential from the government's point of view, but FMM is saying, is trying to make a case while these companies do contribute to the economic activity. And just very quickly on your point, Lynn, about city traffic. So the police has reported that there is more city traffic seen on day one of this MCO, something like 30% increase in vehicles compared to the first MCO that we had. So there are still more vehicles, but obviously I think it's still much less than, say, the day before.
Because I think more sectors are open this time round, right? So people will, some of them are still are going to work.
Yeah, so and I think there's more clarity on which sectors will open. I think in the first MCO, a lot of people are confused, am I essential or am I not essential?
Some interesting business-related news, and I saw this because I'm a financial nerd and all of that, personal finance nerd. Touch and Go Group announced that its subsidiary TNG Digital is the first e-wallet to obtain conditional approval to operate as a recognized market operator by the Securities Commission. This is going to be a big thing, right? Because they're all trying to get into this space of being the super financial app or that one-stop shop to get all your financial needs met, whether it's insurance or investment or the like. So the group said that this approval enables the company to directly distribute capital market products, including money market units, trust funds, through the Touch and Go e-wallet platform without having to be directed to third-party applications. Everyone wants to get into this. When I spoke to Kari Abdullah of Axiata Digital in December, everyone is looking at this trajectory for the e-wallet and the digital apps.
And so now in just two clicks on your TNG wallet, you can buy a unit trust fund.
We'll see. It's still conditional. We'll see how the execution is done.
And just a fun bit of news. Although some have had to postpone their weddings because of the implementation of the MCO, apparently in Sabah, 52 marriages were solemnized at 11:30 at night on the eve of the MCO as the Tawau branch of the Sabah Islamic Religious Affairs Department reached out to ask these potential couples if they wanted to get things done quickly before everything was postponed. So congratulations to those couples. A bit of a bright spark amidst all of the news this morning. Right now, though, the 7 o'clock news coming up for you, and then more business news and analysis. But first, California Soul by Marlena Shaw, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.